We will continue from where we've come so far on the study on first 10 to 14 verses of Genesis 1. And it all stems from, as I said in the beginning when we got started, you know, I have no problem telling people that I talk to that I trust the Bible's validity in all arenas, including scientific. So, you know, that it's valid, that it doesn't work outside of the scope of physics other than the times when the Lord obviously has to step in through miracle to get things kicked off or, you know, the occasions throughout history. But once he gets things rolling, the laws of physics demonstrate that there's order because he is a God of order. So one of the things I told you will happen is if you make that statement, people will look for ways that they can come at you and say, oh, yeah? And so one of them that they like to come at you with is an explanation of the flood, the worldwide flood, because typically there hasn't been really good explanations offered in the past. And I talked about what has predominantly been offered in the past was the idea of a water canopy or water ice vapor canopy above the earth, somewhere near the top of the atmosphere in a suborbital setting. And we went through all the things in reference to that, how there are issues from temperature, pressure, light, you know, and then ultraviolet light, just how it would be difficult to keep a canopy made up of water or vapor or ice above the earth. There are just too many problems. So if you try and come at them with that argument, they're going to go right to science because they're going to tell you, well, remember, you said science. And they're going to come at you and attack that with the very things I've brought up in the last 2 weeks, some of the concerns with the canopy issue. Really? Hello? I've got it aimed towards me. I'm usually my voice carries so much you guys tell me to quiet down. So, is that better? Is that better? Okay. All right. So anyway, like I said, I undertook this study to kind of help you guys see an idea that was presented by a gentleman by the name of Walt Brown, who proposed the hydroplate theory. And I know when I'm done, I'll do this week and next week. They've asked me to go into next week. And then we'll have the awards ceremony on the 24th. And then on the 31st, Jared will take over. And he's going to do some stuff on the hydroplate theory as well. And again, I don't know exactly what he's going to get into. I don't think he's going to be doing what I'm talking about. I'm sure he has his idea what he wants to do. But in any case, let's look at Genesis 7 again, just kind of to open this, and then we'll go back and run over a few more quick review items, then we'll move forward. So when you talk about the flood, you know, the worldwide flood in the Bible, and say that there's proof for it, okay, you got to be able to support that. How would you do it? How would you make a logical explanation for, number one, where did all the water come from for the flood? Number two, where did it all go? So, you know, obviously you're thinking, well, that's easy to answer. Well, not so easy as you think. But anyway, you got to have this first answer is, where did the water come from? You know, and how do you explain all these things in the earth's surface and in the oceans? All this volcanic activity, deep trenches, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, all that. How do you explain that? Well, you can explain it through the hydroplate theory and the worldwide flood. In Genesis 7, let me see here. Where do I want to start here? All right, we'll begin in verse 6. So, now, Noah was 600 years old when the flood of water came upon the earth. Okay, so in his 600th year. Then Noah and his sons, his wife, and his sons' wives with him entered the ark because of the water of the flood. And they talk about the clean animals they took on and everything, along with the pairs of animals. And then in verse 10, it says, it came about after the 7 days that the water of the flood came upon the earth. So he's got 7 days to get these last things ready to go. And then in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, okay? and the floodgates of the sky were opened. Rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. And then it goes on from there. So again, you got to explain 40 days and 40 nights. You got to explain the floodgates of the sky were opened. All right? And that's where the canopy usually comes in. That's where they come up with the canopy theory. But again, like I said, no matter how you present this canopy theory, you have to go less than 40 feet thick in order for it to work in any possible way. And then if you do that, it doesn't produce anywhere near the water necessary to flood the entire earth, including even very low mountains. And the mountains that were on the earth pre-flood were nowhere near the height that they are now. Nowhere near. Okay, so you still got to explain that. And then of course, the rain stops after 40 days and 40 nights, but the water continues to rise for 150 days, or up until 150 days after it starts, sorry. You better be able to explain that. I thought the rain stopped. How come the water's still rising? Well, you know, we have a really big clue here in verse 11 when it says the great deep burst open. And that's what I've been presenting is this theory from Walt Brown. Subterranean waters is where it came from. So I told you last week, and that's a drawing up there if you want to look at it. Not a very good one, but it gives you an idea of day three, what happened on day three. Day one, it's a water ball. Day two, God says he puts this expanse in the midst of the waters. Now, I tell everybody, he's talking about the earth, so it would make sense that he's talking about something that he put in the midst of the waters on the earth, okay? So, and then you move into day three, and that's where the crust rises up out of the water. And again, that's just a really basic drawing to give you an idea. It's not the best, okay? But anyway, the other thing I mentioned to Mr. Taylor last week when we were talking, I said, if you read Genesis 1, let's go back to Genesis 1, you'll notice something kind of unusual about day number 2. We're going to pick it up in verse 6. We know what happened with the first 5 verses, you know, day and night, heaven and earth created, spirit moving over the water, right? Verse 6, it says, and God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters. So I'm telling you guys that the best idea that works for that is that it would be something in the middle of the waters of the earth, okay? And let it separate the waters from the waters. You notice it doesn't say above or below, it just says waters from waters. So if you have a crust, and this is not the best drawing, it should probably come more like this. Below the waters, because it'd be in the midst of it. Go over like this and then turn down. Okay? That's day three because of forces that would be activated by the water above and the water below. You'd have the expanse in the middle of it, so you'd have water above the crust, water below, subterranean. And Walt Brown says he started out with about 10 miles thick, he thought. He's now operating in the understanding of maybe it was 30 to 60 miles thick, the crust. The water would be, on average, a mile of water above the crust when it was in the midst of the waters, and a mile of thick of water or width of water below the crust, okay? At least that much below, maybe a little bit more. Okay, so I'm just trying to do a little bit of a review here. But so the waters are separated, waters from waters. Okay, this is not the word for vapor. It's not the word for ice. It's waters. Maya means waters always. It's never used as vapor, never used as steam, never used as a cloud. It's waters. God made the expanse, okay, and separated the waters which were below the expanse, now that's where the crust comes in, okay, from the waters which were above the expanse. You'd have waters above, waters below. The expanse being nearest crust is what's being talked about here. That's what the proposal is here, okay? Okay. And it was so. God called the expanse heaven, and this is the one I closed with last week, said we'll get to that. And there was evening and there was morning a second day. Okay. All right. Verse 3, or day 3, God called, Verse 9. Then God said, let the waters below the heavens, heaven when we think usually things above us, be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear. And so I have that little hump coming up out of the water on that drawing. I don't know if you can see it. That's when, and that, again, it's just representation. Okay. And let the dry land appear, and it was so. God called the dry land earth. Okay, nobody argues that. It's Eretz. That's what, it's earth, land, okay? And the gathering of the waters, he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees on the earth bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind. And God saw that it was good. Did you notice on day two there's no mention that God said that day was good? But from here on out, it's good until it gets very good. I want you to see that. Because what that tells us is that the work that was going on day two wasn't finished till day three. But you notice that we have two goods in day three. Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place. Let the dry land appear. And it was so in verse 9, right? God called the dry land earth and the gathering of the waters, both above and below. He called seas, and God saw that it was good. It's day three. And then we saw down there at verse 13, there was evening and there was morning after the vegetation sprouts. Third day, right? It's good. 12 and 13, verses 12 and 13. So just want to show that, make sure you saw that. Okay? Just a kind of an interesting little tidbit. I thought you might be interested to see and know that. Okay, so last week we talked about, what is this problem with verse 8? God called the expanse heaven. See, because we always think heaven is above, so this expanse is called heaven, so this is, that's where everybody goes, so this must be something above, right? Must be something above, because heaven's usually above us when God speaks of heaven throughout the rest of the Bible. And that's consistently true, right? And I told you some of the things that the book of Genesis mentions, about heaven, Talks about heaven above us, the plant or the clouds and stuff, all right? By the way, no cloud shows up in the book of Genesis till after the flood. No use of that word. No clouds, okay? All right, but he does talk about things he's going to put in the atmosphere, birds, right? That's going to come after you get, on through verse 4 and 5 and 6 and such, okay? So you're going to have birds and flying things in that heaven, the atmosphere above us. And then you got the planets, the stars, sun, moon, in that heaven, the universe, if you want to call it that. And then the other place that we commonly know that's referred to as heaven is the place where God dwells, right? So last week I said there was two things that were originally started out as a premise from that were presented to Mr. Brown, and he struggled with it. He said in his books, all of his editions that I've seen, up until about 2005, he struggled with it. And the two that were presented was, the one was is that the word order was different in verse 8 there, that it was supposed to read, God called heaven the expanse. But it doesn't work in the language. It just doesn't seem to be the right way to order those words in the Hebrew. Okay? And then the other one that I mentioned to you last week is that there's been a couple of guys, rabbis typically, and some go back to the Middle Ages, 1100s, where a guy said, okay, so remember, all the Hebrew is consonants, no vowels. That's where you get the jots and the tittles that tell you, all the things of what the vowel points are in the Hebrew so you know what the word is, how we would pronounce it and understand it. So last week I told you that there was a rabbi, actually one or two of them, that proposed that, actually there's been more than two, that proposed that if the vowel marks were slightly different, that word for heaven, which is shemayim, the word for water or waters is mayim, Shemayim comes from the Hebrew word esh, which means fire. So you would have, with the vowel points changed slightly, it would say fire in water. That's what that word would say. And God called the expanse fire and water. I think that's plausible in my mind, because when you understand the pressure that comes from subterranean waters where you have the crust weighing down on it, okay, where you don't have where the crust has fallen down and met the mantle, okay, to support, right? And that's through typical physical forces why these things would happen, why you'd have part of the crust that would ultimately deform down and come into contact with the mantle pre-flood, okay? And then when that happens, because the water would spill down into that depression, that pressure would displace the earth, the crust in other areas, and lift it up, right? What gets displaced here has to be moved somewhere else when you're dealing with physics, okay? Be they solids or be they liquids, okay? You know, like when you push on a balloon, whether it's with air or water, right? You push here, it goes down. The other side extends, right? There's displacement, right? So that's true. That's a law of physics, right? So, again, when that happens, so much heat is generated in that water below the crust, all right, that it becomes supercritical. A supercritical fluid means that it gets to a point of pressure and temperature where it exceeds the level at which it will boil. It doesn't boil. Okay, then there's other interesting little things that happen. Water molecules actually start to move into vapor. This is hard to explain for you guys, but they're suspended in vapor because they're all equal density. Okay, and then another thing that happens because of tidal pumping that was going on, remember the tides in our planet are driven predominantly by the moon. So when the moon is pulling its tides in and out, right, you're going to have that crust moving up and down, lifting, high tide, settling at low, okay? And we're going to look at some passages tonight to talk about foundations, pillars, all that kind of stuff, bases or sockets, and how it is going to reference the earth. And this will help you to understand that what Don, I just forgot his last name, Walt Brown, I'm looking at somebody thinking Don, Walt Brown came up with was based upon what he read in the Bible, but what he understood as a PhD physics and mechanical engineering. I mean, this guy's just a planet. Go, this makes total sense. Okay, so again, so when you have that happening, those, and I've got that leg coming down and touching the mantle there, and then on the far right, it's kind of coming down, touching the mantle again. Where those hit, there would be so much pressure on that with heat and everything that they would actually glow. They've been able to reproduce this. They glow in the water. You can actually get fire in the water. Physics prove you can do that, okay? So that's why I say, when this was presented, I thought, well, that's not so far-fetched. But the one that he has really glommed onto of late, and this makes sense to me too. So let's ask some questions. Do any of you guys remember or ever been exposed to, in the past, the periods of time in a time chart? If you're looking at the biblical overview, you'll have the Garden of Eden, which is called the period of, anybody remember? Innocence. Then you got the patriarchal, Mosaic, right? And then the Christian, you know, so the, kind of the dispensations, kind of drawings you'll see sometimes. Remember they call it the period of innocence in the garden? There was a period where it was created, everything's very good, right? Very good. Where was God at that time? What was that, Reen?
Walking in the garden.
Walking and talking in the garden. So what Walt Brown has glommed onto, courtesy of some pastors, quote unquote, that have supplied some information to him, is they say, since God was walking and talking and there was no sin on earth, it would be a place where he could dwell, so it would be heaven on earth. The only time, very brief period from what we can see, but it would be heaven on earth. That's the big cliffhanger I put on you last week. All that. Now think about it. He was with them, wasn't he? So, again, that's the other option. So we're trying to explain verse 8. God called the expanse heaven. So if the expanse is a crust and God's down there walking and talking with Adam and Eve, okay, until they sin, and then we know that there was a definite result that came from that, which shot through the universe, you know, and created the law of second law of thermodynamics, where everything is moving towards no work, no energy, no entropy, okay? That started. All right, so that's how we address verse 8. God called the expanse heaven. I think the two best options are the last two I gave you. Either the vowel points are changed slightly, and you get fire and water, which makes sense, you know? Or you have to look at it like God is actually, heaven's come down and is dwelling on earth because it's the period of innocence, no sin. So I'll ask you again, in heaven, once Christ ascended, is there any sin in heaven? No. Where do we dwell by faith? Where there is no sin. In the presence of who? Come on, guys, work with me. God. And we call that place the church. Well, the church is there in heaven. Yeah, the church is there. But caught my ear. I'm just trying to get you to think a little bit. Listen, I'm not here saying this is right, this is wrong. You got. I'm just think about it. Think about it. Okay. That's all I want you to do. Okay, let's look at some verses now that deal with this expanse being the earth. And we're going to look at verses that have the words seas, the deeps, because, you know, there's something in the beginning, you know, in verse 2 of Genesis 1, surface of the deeps. You know, so I'm going to look. But I had some other ones that I knew about. But so let's just go through these, okay? So we're going to look at... we're going to look at the word seas, all righty? It's probably going to be quicker for me to get on my electronic to get to all these verses faster. And then you guys can, you know, ask questions or whatever. We're going to start with Job 38, okay? This is a really good chapter. It's not only going to mention seas in this chapter, it's going to mention the word foundation. Okay? And then, let me see, is there one other? Oh, yeah, and then it's going to... Bases. Okay, so let's just read this. 38, verse 1. Then the Lord, Yahweh, answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" Boy, that'd make you swallow hard, wouldn't it? "Now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me." I don't think I want the Lord to ask me that. "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth?" I don't know about you, but I read this stuff in the past. I thought, well, this has got to be some kind of symbolic meaning. But now that I know about the hydroplate theory and foundation, you know, the crust running down and settling on the mantle like a foundation, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth?" I think it's a literal statement God's making. "Tell me if you have understanding. Who set its measurements, since you know? Or who stretched the line on it? And on what were its bases sunk?" Bases there is that word you see in the rest, most of the rest of the Old Testament, particularly when it's talking about the tabernacle. Sockets. Okay? You know how sockets work. Go down into it. tidal pumping from the moon would move that crust up and down, so as it raises up and the high tide comes down low, it's going to ultimately make a little indentation in that mantle, a socket. Okay, on what were its bases sunk, or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God, that would be the angels, shouted for joy? Or who enclosed the sea with doors? Now, what? Doors with the sea above the land? What? Don't they kind of roll up gradually onto shores, typically? I know they can hit some kind of sheer cliffs, but aren't they, you know? Who enclosed the sea with doors? Oh, let me see. So if this crust deformed and went down due to pressures, and it's down here due to pressures, you've got like a sea contained. You need a door to open up, right? When, bursting forth, it went out from the womb. Where is a womb? Is that on top of the woman's belly, or is it inside? Look, guys, I'm just trying to get you. You see now, there's clues everywhere. There's clues everywhere. You can see why Walt Brown saw this, went, whoa. Okay, when I made a cloud, its garment, thick darkness, its swaddling band, and I placed boundaries on it, set a bolt and doors, and I said, thus far you shall come, but no further. Here shall your proud waves stop. When he shut the waters off, I mean, when things went through the physical processes shut the floodwaters off, stopped it, didn't it? The waves on the earth now are. I'm telling you, this makes way more sense when I read it. I hope it does for you guys. All right, Psalm 24. Verse 1. The earth is the Lord's and all it contains, the world and those who dwell in it, for he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers. Okay, now that could be above or below. Let me ask you, is there water, seas below? Yeah. Are there rivers below the crust of the earth or down below? Oh, yeah, there too. Could be either. I'm just pointing out. Time for you to think about these. These are for you to consider, right? I'm just throwing them out. Psalm 33, verse 7. Well, let's begin in verse 6. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made. So he's kind of talking about creation, it sounds like. And by the breath of his mouth, all their hosts. That'd be the planets, stars, sun, moon. He gathers the waters of the sea together as a heap. Any of you got a note there next to as a heap? What does your note say, Mr. Toole? We'll yell it out.
In a water skin.
In a water skin. Right? Or a container. He lays up the deeps in storehouses. The deeps in storehouses. All interesting stuff. Psalm 135. Okay. Verse 6. Whatever the Lord pleases, he does. In heaven and in earth, in all the seas and in all deeps, whatever the Lord pleases. Okay. Just want to leave that for you. Again, just something to think about. Back to Proverbs chapter 3. We're going to look at verse. Are you guys doing okay? Staying up with me? Hopefully I'm giving you enough time to write down these verses, so you can go back and check them out. 19, Proverbs 3:19. The Lord, by wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps were broken up, and the skies drip with dew. Notice the deeps are broken up, then the sky dips, or dips, drips with dew. I'm about two statements. Now, Genesis 7, real quick again. Go back to Genesis 7, verse 11. Let's see if this order is consistent, shall we? Verse 11, in the 600th year of Noah's life, this is Genesis 7. Verse 11, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open. What went first? The deeps. Okay, deep. And the floodgates of the sky were open. Oh. Okay. I'm sure that's not very important, but just want to make sure you saw it. Proverbs 8. This is speaking of wisdom, this chapter. You can go back to verse 12 and it'll tell you specifically there, I, wisdom, and then it goes on. Okay? So we're going to grab it here in verse 27. When he, God, Lord Jesus Christ, when he established the heavens, I was there. When he inscribed a circle on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when the springs of the deep became fixed, when he set for the sea its boundaries so that the water would not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth. Then I was beside him as a master. Hopefully you're seeing some patterns kind of developing here in these passages. Amos. Chapter 5 first. Verse 8, Amos 5. He who made the Pleiades, I don't know if that's how you say it up, that's how I'm saying it, and Orion, and changes deep darkness into morning, who also darkens day into night, who calls for the waters of the sea and pours them out on the surface of the earth, Yahweh, the Lord is his name. The only time you really see in Scripture where God speaks about pouring water out on judgment or as a means of judgment, it's the flood. It's the only time. Okay? So that's why I think Amos here is talking about the flood. Okay. Back to Job chapter 9. We'll begin in verse 5 here. It is God, 9:5, Job 9:5. It is God who removes the mountains. They know not how, when he overturns them in his anger, who shakes the earth out of its place and its pillars tremble. Remember, pillars that are made by the deforming of the crust based on the forces, physical forces that would cause that. Who alone stretches out the heavens and tramples down the waves of the sea, who makes the Bear, Orion, and the Pleiades, right? And the chambers of the south. Okay, so anyway. All right, we already read 38 of Job through there, so I'm going to go by that again. How about Psalm 75? Let's look at Psalm 75. And this is just talking about God in general, okay? A song of praise here by Asaph. I'm going to pick it up in verse 2. When I select an appointed time, Psalm 75, verse 2, when I select an appointed time, it is I who judge with equity, speaking of God. The earth and all who dwell in it melt, all right? Or you could read that as totter. It is I who have firmly set its pillars. Let me see. These two are parallel, but we'll go to 2 Samuel. And then this is also contained in Psalm 18:15. We want to go to 2 Samuel 22, slightly different verbiage. And most of this passage here, where it's actually going to start, you know, David talking about how the Lord's going to deliver him. You know, he talks about the waves of death encompassed me, the torrents of destruction overwhelmed me. That's in verse 5 of 2 Samuel 22. The cords of Sheol surrounded me, the snares of death confronted me. He cried out to God. He said, from his temple he heard my voice and my cry for help. It looks like most of this that's here in this passage, all right, is talking about things that would have happened at Mount Sinai. I think that's what it's pointing at, okay? But I think in verse 16, it kind of seems out of place if it's Mount Sinai. So I think he switches here, and he's just making a reference to God's power, okay? He's comparing the power that he has to do what he can physically on the earth, okay? This is David's confidence in his power to deliver him. Verse 16, he says, then the channels of the sea appeared. The foundations of the world were laid bare by the rebuke of the Lord at the blast of the breath of his nostrils. It just seemed a little out of place if he's referencing back to Mount Sinai. And I think the previous verses make more sense with Mount Sinai. You guys can check this out. Okay. But this seems to be a reference back to God's power in the flood. Okay? And particularly at his rebuke. Remember when the flood came? You guys are toast. I'm done with you. Okay? So I find it similar. Okay, now this is also in Psalm 18, which was a psalm that Mr. Toole said, are we going to talk about Psalm 18? Am I right? Last week? Yeah. So Psalm 18 is this same one, and I just kind of gave you the overview until you get down to in Psalm 18. Verse 15, it says, then the channels of water appeared, a little different there, and the foundations of the world were laid bare at your rebuke, O Lord, at the blast of the breath of your nostrils. Okay? So, Mr. Toole, was yours having to do with where it uses the word canopy? Is that where you were? You're talking about from the verse 12?
The end of verse 11.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. He made darkness his hiding place, his canopy around him. Okay, do you have a note there next to that?
Yeah.
Say pavilion?
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody know what that Hebrew word is? It's the Hebrew word succoth. You ever heard of that before? Feast of Booths. That's the word for booth. Okay? So, again. Talking about, all right, so it's kind of a booth. All right? That same word, there's three words that are translated canopy or something close to it in the Old Testament. I gave them to you, I think last week I did. I thought I did. But I can look them back up for you. But succoth is one of them. Okay? Most of them either mean pavilion, booth, canopy, almost house, another one if I remember right. So, but anyway, so like I said, I think he's talking about here in the previous verses, knowing this is my perspective, he seems to be talking about events that would have occurred at Mount Sinai. Because the earth shook and quaked at Mount Sinai. They trembled. There was smoke on the mountain, right? There's fire on the mountain. Lightning in the air. Okay, nobody got that one? Okay. Right. He bowed to heavens and came down. I mean, that sounds like Mount Sinai. It doesn't sound like the flood. Okay. He made darkness his hiding place. Remember, there was darkness. All right. So that's why I'm saying that's, to me, is a reference to Mount Sinai. The one verse in 2 Samuel 22, verse 16, and Psalm 18, 15, it just doesn't seem to work in here. Then the channels of water appeared, and the foundations of the world were laid bare at your rebuke. What was David looking for? Deliverance, right? Got to remember that. Deliverance. What did Noah receive when the channels of the water appeared and the foundations of the world were laid bare? Deliverance. Are you tracking with me? You guys getting that? See what I'm driving at? Okay. All right. Psalm 104. Again, I'm just asking you guys to check these out. You notice I'm not telling you, you got to believe this, got to be, you know. Now, I have my opinion. Okay. And I'll share it with you if you want to know it. All right, Psalm 104. This is a very well-known one. I know by Mr. Taylor and myself and Mr. Hopper liked this psalm. You know which one I'm talking about, right, Mr. Taylor? He makes the winds his messengers, flaming fire his ministers, right? Okay, now, verse 1. Bless the Lord, O my soul, O Lord my God, you are very great. You are clothed with splendor and majesty, covering yourself with light as with a cloak. Now he covers himself with light. God is light. Okay, stretching out heaven like a tent curtain, he lays the beams of his upper chambers in the waters. Oh, let me see. What would be the beams in the upper chambers? Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. He makes the clouds his chariot. He walks upon the wings of the wind, right? And then he goes on his messengers, flaming fire, his ministers. Oops. He established the earth upon its foundations so that it will not totter forever and ever. See, now, if God would have left the expanse in the waters without the physical forces that he kicked into gear under the laws of physics, this crust would have floated in the middle. Nothing would have ever deformed. Okay? And that thing would have been like you laying on a waterbed and somebody on each kitty corner pushing down on it, and you're just rocking and rolling, right? And that goes on, you know, a good 12 hours of the day. Whoa, whoa. It's interesting that this terminology is used. Okay? So that it will not totter. He had to allow the physical laws that he established to create those pillars and foundations so that it would stay somewhat stable. So it wouldn't be undulating. Okay? You covered it with the deep as with a garment. That sounds an awful lot like the expanse and, you know, beginning in verse 6 there in Genesis 1, covered it with the deep as with a garment. The waters were standing above the mountains. Now, I mean, all right, when did that happen? The flood. At your rebuke, they fled. When the physical processes were finished, done, they fled. They drained kind of slowly, but they fled. Everybody still tracking? Proverbs 8. I don't think we did this one yet. Yeah, we did. We did this one. I did it in the earlier one when I was talking about the deeps. So forget Proverbs 8. Isaiah 51. Verse 13. Which one? Verse 13. We'll begin in verse 12. Isaiah 51. Verse 12. This is after he says, "And come with joyful shouting to Zion, and everlasting joy will be on their heads. They will obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. I am he who comforts you. Who are you that you are afraid of man who dies, and the son of man who is made like grass? That you've forgotten the Lord your Maker who stretched out the heavens." That sounds kind of like creation. "And laid the foundations of the earth." Kind of sounds like, you know, creation. Okay. Jeremiah 31. 37. Jeremiah 31, verse 37. Thus says the Lord, if the heavens above can be measured and the foundations of the earth searched out below, then I will also cast off all the offspring of Israel for all that they have done. They couldn't much get down there and check out the foundations of the earth. Okay? But notice the terminology. And then the last one here, Micah. And these are just for your consideration, okay? Chapter 6, we'll read 1 and 2 of Micah. Chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Hear now what the Lord is saying. Arise, plead your case before the mountains, and let the hills hear your voice. Listen, you mountains, to the indictment of the Lord, and you enduring foundations of the earth. Because the Lord has a case against his people, even with Israel he will dispute. So again, sure seems like, you know, these foundations, pillars, bases, deep seas, all it sure seems like it supports what Walt Brown presents. That expanse in the midst of the waters was the earth's crust, okay? And then it did have deformation take place because of physical, you know, powers, we'll just say, you know, laws of physics would cause that. And so it ended up supporting the crust and creating these subterranean seas that were locked up, had to burst forth, had to have the bolt slid, so to speak, and come out, and the waves would then go over the surface of the earth. I mean, you can, all this stuff we read, brethren, it just really backs up what Walt Brown presents in his theory, the hydroplate theory. And I haven't gotten into the major stuff yet, okay? I'm thinking Jared might get into some of that. But I wanted to get this to you tonight so you can take a look at all these verses and consider this stuff, okay? So it seems to me that the expanse is definitely the earth, particularly what's being talked about there in verse 6, on through the end of the third day, morning and evening, the third day in verse 13. He's talking about the earth, not talking about a canopy. And again, the only problem that creates a problem is God called the expanse heaven in the beginning of verse 8. And I gave you a couple, three different ways to view that. I think the final two I gave you again, one of them is that if you change the vowel points, and I don't know if that's a possibility or if it happened or could have, I don't know. But it is kind of unique that a couple of changed vowel points, it changes that word from heaven into fire and the waters, which is exactly what you would see with glowing pillars in the water because of all the pressure that's created. And again, I'm not going to get into all the, you know, all the equations that Mr. Brown presents and uses to confirm what he's proposing. Based upon laws of physics. He isn't creating something new. He's just based upon laws of physics. It shows how accurate those laws are and how they so closely parallel what we have for biblical information. Okay, and then the other one is it would be called heaven on earth because there was no sin as yet. And so God was walking and talking. So if we're talking about creation week and we get more information in chapter 2 about creation week, God's walking and talking on earth. Well, where God's hanging out, we know the scripture calls that heaven. So just something for you to think of. We know when sin came, he gone. Just like when they sinned in the camp, when they came out of Egypt, right? He took the tent of meeting outside the camp. He was gone. Not going to dwell amongst you guys. So we see some consistency, both before sin came and then after sin. All right. So that's when the processes all start. Next week, I will talk to you about, well, let's just read it. I'll tell you what we're going to discuss. And if we have time, one other thing. In chapter 2, again, building upon the record in chapter 1, just adding more information. Verse 4, it says, in chapter 2 of Genesis. This is what we'll look at next week. I'll tell you which verse. This is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that the Lord God made earth and heaven. Now no shrub of the field was yet in the earth, and no plant of the field had yet sprouted, for the Lord God had not sent rain upon the earth, and there was no man to cultivate the ground. But a mist, the word in Hebrew is, we would use our letters in English of ED, so it would be Ed. Ed, you're a mist, according to the Hebrew. Okay, but a mist used to rise from the earth and water the whole surface of the ground. What? Guess what? The hydroplate theory answers this perfectly. Shows how it would actually happen. We'll look at that next week. And if we got time, we'll talk about chapter 11. Just some things in case you guys are wondering what's Kevin going to do, what's going to be interesting next. Okay? Let me get down here. Okay. Verse 16. This is what I'd like to cover next week if I have time for both. If not, I'll at least do the watering of the earth in chapter 2. Verse 16, Genesis 12. Eber, we think that's where we get Hebrew from, lived 34 years and became the father of Peleg. Or Plague, however you want to say it. Eber lived 418. Peleg lived 30 years and became the father of Reu, right? All right. Let me see here. Peleg lived 209 years after he became the father of Reu. He had other sons and daughters. And then it goes on to Reu. And I'm missing the verse I'm looking for. Arg. Double arg. I wonder where it says the earth was divided in the days of Peleg. Where is that? How come I can't see it? I thought I had it here. I know it's in chapter 11. I think it is. Maybe it's in chapter 10. But huh. I thought that was in chapter 12. Well, somebody want to do a little, listening music while I look that up real quick? Thank you. Yeah, go ahead and do the Jeopardy song. That always works. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Chapter 10. I was a chapter ahead. Chapter 10, verse 25. Two sons were born to Eber. The name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. And his brother's name was Joktan. Okay. And we'll look at that if we have time. That too also is answered through the theory, the hydroplate theory by Walt Brun. Okay. I'd ask for questions, but it's 8:05, and Mr. Toole wants to get this thing moving.